Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 376, being recorded on the 5th of May, 2021, with special guest David Giard. I'm Sujeet, and on Teams with me, we have our special guest, David, who's actually been with us before, almost 6 years ago, maybe. And so happy to have him back, talk about Azure Media Services. Before we get to him, we're going to cover a whole bunch of updates that have happened this week. And also want to just say happy Cinco de Mayo to everybody. Hope everyone has a fun day today. Let's get started with the updates. Kendall, I know there's one that you're particularly close to. Go ahead.
Yeah, sounds good. So I'm glad you brought this up, Suji, before the call, because if you're familiar with AKS and the way that the storage drivers work now, we've actually, as of the 1.21 release, the CSI driver will basically, or container storage interface, will be our default driver from a storage perspective. And I actually, my teammate and I did a really cool webinar over the past 3 weeks, all about kind of starting AKS, understanding best practices, implementing and configuring your cluster. And one of the things we talked about was using the Secret Store CSI driver plugin for Key Vault as like a really secure way, or a more secure way, to sync up secrets into your Kubernetes cluster from a secure external secret store. And so Sajid called out the fact that we actually are now providing support in preview for the CSI secret store driver. So that is an open source project that we were already recommending. You can use it alongside pod identity. Keep in mind pod identity currently undergoing a rewrite, which you can see in the public GitHub repo. So the current pod identity will never go GA, but we will, you know, be releasing a new feature after that rewrite is complete. So really exciting. I just recommend looking into, you know, the combination of using pod identity to authenticate your cluster to Key Vault, and then using the CSI driver, especially the plugin for Key Vault, in order to then secure your Kubernetes secrets. And you can even sync them up with Kubernetes secrets inside of your cluster, or you can mount them as a driver using that CSI driver. So lots of good documentation out there. We'll make sure to drop in the show notes, but we'll also put in the link to that webinar series where we cover what this does in more detail.
Very cool. And I know previously we used to use the FlexWall, right? A Flex Volume, I think is what they called it. And yeah, that served us well, but that had some limitations. And I think a lot of those limitations have been addressed in the CSI driver. So definitely looking forward to that. Cynthia, you brought up a good one on the new acquisition that Microsoft made. Go ahead and tell us about that.
Yeah, it's also along the front of Kubernetes, which I'm less familiar about, but I know there's been a lot of just hype around the acquisition of Kinvolk. People that are in the Kubernetes space are probably pretty familiar with them in their contribution with the community and just in the cloud native space in general. They will, after the acquisition, they will be joining our development in a lot of AKS-related projects, as well as Arc, to ensure that Kubernetes can run everywhere and that the experience is still pretty uniform and as good as it can be.
Awesome. And I have two updates to talk about. One is the Azure Web Pub Sub service. Okay. And what this is, as you know, in the HTTP protocol, it's a request response. You know, you put a request in, you get a response back. You can't really wait for something that's going to happen in the future. It's, you know, you have to do things like long polling, some workarounds like that. So the HTTP protocol has innovated with the use with WebSockets, but there wasn't a clear way to expose them from Azure previously. You had to do it programmatically. And so now with this Azure Web Pub Sub service, that essentially allows you to have these WebSockets open from your application, you know, without doing a whole lot of workarounds, do things like sending asynchronous notifications or any other thing that requires real-time communications with the clients with the browser. So that's one of them. The second one, which I'm really excited about, is our new NPV1 virtual machines that are generally available. What's cool about these is that they have what are known as field programmable gate arrays, so FPGAs. And essentially, these allow you to take a software construct and embed it and make it hardware, essentially, is really the short form of it. And so you could take some algorithm, let's say it's a complicated machine learning algorithm, and embed it literally in the hardware in a form of an array of gates and make it run at hardware speeds. And so that's really cool. That allows you to run these workloads at really fast speeds. Imagine doing like a machine learning algorithm in a fraction of the time, even faster than some of the high speed CPUs like GPUs we have today. So those are the two updates I have.
I was just gonna say, Sajid, I know that I think even on our like machine learning cloud native session that we had, I think we potentially talked about like customers sometimes want to use those FPGA type of VMs in AKS. So I'm curious. I know AKS, I believe, is now going to support dynamically all of the VM SKUs, but I'm curious if that falls under kind of that specialized category. But that's really compelling to be able to have that functionality because that's not something that was there previously. Cool.
Yeah, that's a good call out. Well, thanks. This is the time we turn the mic over to our special guest, David Girard. And, David, as I mentioned, has previously been on the show. We're happy to have him back. He and I are actually in the same organization in Microsoft, which is CSC. But David, please reintroduce yourself to our listeners. Let them know what you're doing these days, and we'll take it from there.
Oh, thanks very much. I've actually moved a couple of times physically to new homes since we last spoke about 6 years ago. And then I've moved organizations. Back then I was in DX, and now I'm in commercial software engineering, CSC. Our role is to help engineers at large companies build applications for Azure, get them over the hump of building Azure, often it's their first cloud application they're building or migrating, and help them with establishing good engineering practices. So we actually sit down side by side with engineers builds cool stuff with them.
And so what are some of the kind of workloads you are working on these days? Like, what are some of the areas that you get more involved in these days?
Well, this past fiscal year, July 1 of last year, I joined a team for media and communications. And Microsoft, of course, has a cloud tool for that called Azure Media Services. So I've been doing some work with them. This is a tool that allows you to share media online with others in a highly scalable way, as a highly reliable way as the cloud does.
David, how do we think about Azure Media Services versus something like Stream that is also a Microsoft service that we provide where you can host videos and people can see them?
Well, I'm not really familiar with Stream. I haven't worked with it before, but I can tell you what Azure Media Services does. It addresses kind of the full gamut of as a toolkit for really managing an entire platform for sharing media, whether that's video on demand, live streaming video, or pre-recorded video. And if you've worked with video, you know that some of the challenges are things like not everybody's connecting in the same way. Some people are using their phones to connect. Some people are using Windows. Some are using Linux. Some are using Macs. So they're expecting in different formats. Some people have a really fast internet connection, where some people have much more or slower or maybe not even a reliable connection. And so taking all that into account makes it a complex problem. And so that's what Azure Media Services gives us tools to do that, to publish it and then make it available encoded in a bunch of different formats, a bunch of different sizes, allow people to view it over different connections, to do an adaptive streaming so that it'll basically give them the right experience given their type of connection. And then it provides security and some analysis. Does Stream all do that? I'm actually not that familiar with Stream.
And I think Stream kind of lets you basically just upload your video and share it with people within the company. Not really sure if it's really meant for external use, but I guess media services can be used for external use as well, right?
Okay, if I'm understanding this, Stream sounds like a great tool for end users that you don't really need a lot of technology to use it. You can just plug in and share videos. Is that a fair statement? It's sort of like YouTube does that. YouTube is great for, I've got a video, I want to put it online, and my grandma can watch it, and everything's good. It's dirt simple. Whereas if you want more than that, if you want to build your own YouTube platform, something internally, and you wanted to add security around it, you want to add some analysis to it, doing closed captioning and doing some facial recognition, Azure Media Services provides tools for that. So it's a relatively advanced tool, or tool set, I should say.
So David, help me understand, because I'm not going to lie, right now it's not tangible to me. I'm not seeing where the media services bit fits in. So is it like a GUI, like a front end UI that I get out of the box that I can, you know, plug things in, I can record through, or is it like back end APIs that I'm using in a custom fashion from a custom application using my own hardware for the actual, you know, video aspects? So I don't know, maybe a real world example would be helpful, because I'm just struggling to figure out, like, does it come prepackaged almost like?
That's a great, great question. It's really more of a toolkit. And yes, there is a UI, but the UI is more for managing videos. It's in part of the Azure portal. If you want to do live streaming, for example, you would need not only your own camera, but you would want to have some sort of streaming software that would connect to Azure Media Services. So it'll expose a port, you can have that port running and ready to accept streaming video, but you'd have to have some tool locally for managing that video yourself. And if you want, or again, if you wanted to actually create prepackaged videos, you'd want to use some tool, I don't know, Adobe Premiere like that, to do the editing. It doesn't provide that. It's more about sharing your video, sharing it in encoding it in ways that other people can consume it, setting security around it, and analyzing it.
So, like, would it be something that like Teams uses in the back end? Like, is it news companies that are using this? Like, who are our customers? Like, who is the, you know, who do we sell this to? Who makes use of it? I think an example would help put it in context.
Sure. A great example would be if you're a media provider, say a news organization would be a good one, or any kind of TV network, and you want to provide video on demand. Not only is there a UI, there's also an API where you can call a REST service and say, I want to set up this channel. I want to be available at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time, and it's going to be ready to go, and it's going to scale out to this number of users because this is a national channel. I want to make sure that I have enough resources for it, and then I want to shut it down again at 12:15 after it's over and the last thing. And then when I'm done, I want to archive that and make it available. I want to take the videos on there, archive them, make them available for people to watch later on that couldn't catch it at 11:30. Maybe a sporting event, maybe a sports league wants to do something similar. They've got games scheduled a certain time. They want to spin up those resources, make them available, and then afterwards encode them, store them in Azure storage, let people watch those videos on demand later.
David, I know you mentioned that security is one thing that you can manage through Azure Media Services. Does that mean I can control who can watch certain content to that level? And does it integrate with some sort of like identity provider so people have to log in to know that like I'm in this security group so I can view this video or I'm subscribed? How does that work?
You can by default just turn it on and it's just open. Anybody can use it, but you can integrate it with an OAuth provider. You can integrate it with Azure Active Directory and secure your application that way. And then, of course, everything is through HTTPS, so there's some security in transit.
I know, David, you mentioned that it does this adaptive encoding feature. Is that something you have to set up, or is that out of the, like, you know, do you say for this video, I want it exposed in these particular formats, or does it just support all the formats out of the box? You know, what as a consumer, what do you have to do?
As you're using this product here, there's really two steps. The first step is to publish the video, and the second step is to encode the video. It's in that encoding process where you're given these options as to whether or not, you know, you want to encode it just for a specific size, just for a specific format, and then whatever it encodes to, it stores that in Azure storage as multiple files, and then there's a JSON file that has some metadata about which file is in which format, which size, and there's even a sample HTML page if you want to use that. That'll embed a video tag and allow you to select the resolution or set it to auto resolution. So if I'm online and I happen suddenly my internet speed goes down, this happens on my mobile device, for example, then it'll automatically adjust which video it's showing. Another cool thing actually is the analytics. If you've got a video and you want to get more information about it, then there's it taps into cognitive services and it can do things like object detection, you know, whether or not a person is there, or facial detection. So you could, for example, use this tool for setting up security cameras. If you've got maybe a camera that you're not expecting any people in this room overnight, it might be nice to be able to just push process that video through cognitive services and in the morning have it detect, or maybe in real time have it detect whether or not any people entered this room. And if they did enter this room, then you'll know exactly where they are. You could actually do some facial recognition against them, things like that.
So within this space, David, I'm just kind of curious, so I know that we're on V3, so I guess that means we had a V2. So how long has media services been around? And then, you know, was that created by Microsoft in response to other comparable offerings? Like, is this something, you know, what would be maybe a comparable offering that a customer might consider outside of Azure to do some of these things? Just, you know, curious if I've ever heard the names or anything like that.
I don't know a whole lot about the history of media services. It's been around for at least 3 years. That's when I first learned it. I wrote a series of blog posts and did some videos on it, and I ended up redoing them because the user interface has changed so much. One of the competitors I've heard about is a company called MediaKind that does some similar thing. My understanding is they're more expensive and they have some extra features to justify that. But I'm not familiar with the other competitors.
Okay, so not necessarily like comparable services in other, do you know if the other clouds provide a service similar? You know, that's something I can look up, but just curious, we can drop that.
I don't.
Okay, no worries.
What else? Oh yeah, there's also, of course, a content delivery network. So if you've got users all over the world, it can make copies of your video. It's tapping into the CDN that Azure Storage has and reduce the latency that way.
I know you mentioned that these get stored in Azure storage locations. How does the pricing work other than, you know, you pay for storage? Does it work per video or per the number of views or the time that you have it in there? How does that work?
That is a great question. And the thing you have to be cognizant with it, as with almost everything in Azure, is that storage is cheap and compute is expensive. And so generally, it's not a big deal when you're doing uploading of your videos, you're publishing your videos, and you're encoding those videos, because that tends to be a short period of time. But when you're hosting those videos and making them available and people watch them, that's compute. And that's when you want to make sure that you're streaming your videos during times that people are going to watch. So if you're doing live streaming, you want to make sure that you're scheduling these things. Say, if this broadcast is going to end at 11:30, I want to be cognizant of not letting go too far past that, then because I'll be paying for that, and that's significantly higher than storage costs. But there are times, like I mentioned, the sports league example. Of course, it's hard to do if you're scheduling the sports game. They can go on longer than expected. But if you're doing something like a network television show, then you know exactly what they do.
David, does Azure Media Service provide you an endpoint? So, for instance, if I were to stream something, like, do I get an URL that I can share with people, or is that something I embed into my website?
That's exactly what you do. It'll provide you an endpoint, and then you can use that in a video tag, for example, in an HTML page, or in your rich client application if you wanted to build something.
What are the new things that you think they're coming up with in Azure Media Services? Are there some roadmap items that you may be aware of, things that customers are asking for that we don't have as of yet?
Oh, this I don't know. I haven't been talking to the product team. That would be a good question for them. The one thing that I'd like to see is this is a great tool if you want to build an entire platform. But if you just wanted to share a video, there's multiple steps to go through, and then using some pre-built service. I keep coming back to YouTube. The simplicity of YouTube is that if you want to share a video very quickly, then a few clicks and you're done. It would be nice to have something like that. Take these tools and build a front end in front of them. Make it easy to do. I don't know whether or not that's on their roadmap, but that's something that I would request.
Well, it's maybe some of our listeners can contribute that. Maybe it's
there we go. It'd be a great open
source project, right?
Build a new YouTube.
There you go. Awesome. So you mentioned there's a programming API that's available for Azure Media Services. What does that entail? Is that like what kind of services might we expect out of the programming API? Is that just for creating channels or you know, things like what's the purpose for that?
Yeah, things like publishing, just about anything you do in the portal. Things like publishing the video, encoding the video, starting a live stream, things like that. It's under the hood, it's a REST API, but there are SDKs for that as well. I will point out that I did create on a series of videos just recently. If somebody wants to look at that,
Please send us the
link. Link is aka.ms/gcast. Gcast.
Okay.
Gcast by David Gr. And on there, if you go, I just burnt up right now. But there's a few. I did a whole series on how to use Azure Media Services in like about 5 videos that I did, and kind of walks you through from the basics to coding.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks. I'm looking at them now. We'll make sure that we throw those in the show notes.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Any more questions for David before we let him go today?
All I was going to say is if I have customers that reached out, which I have, about Azure Media Services, I know who to call, right? That's what you're telling
me. Call me and tell them to watch my videos. Well, they're really short. I try to keep them a little bite-sized.
That's cool. Well, David, thanks again for coming back
for
on the show.
Me. Appreciate it.
Appreciate all sharing all your insights. And send us the links and we'll publish them on the show notes.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.